It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, and Game Plus. How you doing? What's happening? What's happening, party people? It's Gil Alexander. Thanks for joining us this morning. Jason Kahn, Bruiser number 7, is here. Morning, Jason. Got a packed show for us today, do you?
Yes, we do, Gil. Good morning.
What do we got? We got basketball with Dan Bespris coming up and a whole bunch of baseball. Jason Weingarten will join us with his baseball picks. Jason and I doing picks all season long here in the truncated season. And Josh Towers. No, don't Josh. Back on the show this morning. Looking forward to his vitriol. Try to get him worked out about something baseball-wise as we have, what is it now, 6 days left in the Major League Baseball regular season, and I'm bearing the headlines. Drew Densick will be here as well to talk not only NBA with us, but also NFL as well. Look back at week two, look ahead rather to week three, what he's already bet, what he's thinking about betting, and I'm sure I'm leaving something out. But we begin today with a gentleman who I listen to on local radio here on the way in, Moonlighting. Not only, of course, the host of The Edge here at VSiN, but a man who works all about town. Take that as you will. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the host of The Edge. I mentioned that. Jonathan Von Tobel. Good morning, JVT. How you doing?
You got to get extra money somehow, right? That side hustle. Got to get it going.
Well, some people do other things. You do that. I think that's a good career choice for you. Let's start with, before we get to basketball, because I do want to talk to you about, obviously, the Lakers and the Nuggets and the Heat and the Celtics. But the Raiders last night, huge day for the city of Las Vegas as Allegiant Stadium finally opens. The Death Star, obviously no fans there. Not exactly how they would have liked to have scripted this, but 2020 is what it is. But the Raiders win it, JVT, 34-24. They not only cover, but win it outright as four-point dogs, what ended up being four-point dogs. Derek Carr, let's start there. And let me just ask you about this, because much speculation about Derek Carr's long-term status with the Raiders has been a thing since after the 12-4 season. 28 of 38 for 282, three touchdowns, no picks, sacked three times, passer rating of 120.7. Can we put all the Derek Carr is not here long-term stuff to bed, at least now?
I'm not sure. I mean, I feel like yes. It's funny because on the surface, if you just looked at Carr's raw numbers, like you would take a quarterback like that any day of the week, right, for a team that needs a quarterback. But Gil, you know, he was actually kind of the same Derek Carr last night, right? A majority of his targets to tight ends and running backs, you know, nothing insane downfield. There were some attempts downfield, but part of it was the scripted plays. And Pro Football Focus for week one actually had a great stat that in week one, at least, his average depth of target during the scripted plays, the opening drives, was 17.4 yards downfield. The rest of the game, it was 3.4 yards downfield, you know, so he's still got the same things that he does. But I think in this sort of a system and this offense, right, if Jacobs is going to be as brutal as he is in terms of just running the ball, and they were, what, I think 10 of 17 on third down, something insane, 2 for 2 on fourth downs. Like if you're just the definition of matriculate the ball down the field, I think he's kind of perfect for what they do. So I think the questions about Carr are always going to be there because he's always going to be that quarterback. But for right now, the marriage between him and Gruden, I think, kind of works at this point. It's just, are you going to be happy with those games that pop up? Where he's just checking it down and he's not going to be as effective through the air because they are coming.
He's definitely a matriculator. Matriculators aren't bad, though. Let me ask you about Darren Waller. 12 catches for 103 yards and a touchdown. For those who watched the Raiders on Hard Knocks even last year, and for those who watched any time Waller was in a game last year, it seemed like he could do whatever he wanted at any time, and it was just up to the Raiders to decide, you know, we're going to go to Waller on this play. And yesterday it was finally in full display on national TV. Why do they overthink this with him? Shouldn't he be, I mean, he was last night, but shouldn't he be the center of their offense all the time, all day, every day?
I think 100% yes. Like when you have a running game that can set him up and play action as well, you know, he's not exactly like a physically over imposing tight end, right? But he's kind of spelt and he can move around very well. Like I love this guy. He looks very good in their offense. He should be their number one option. And the rest of the weapons can come through that, but you're absolutely right. And to go back to what we're talking about, like their offense, I think looked like in all the games we've seen under John Gruden last night is the best I think it's looked. And it was because he was the focal point of their offense outside of the running game. So I would agree with that 100%. You know, know, we talk a lot about like getting wide receivers involved and getting speed involved. But when you have a weapon like he does, we've seen multiple offenses in the past that tight ends can be a number one option and they can be successful. And I would agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, it's not that hard. It's Occam's razor, right? Like, the most obvious choices, I think, to go through this guy who has been dominant every time he's on the field and every time they want to go through him and build their offense through him.
I hate when coaches overthink something. Like, they almost did to justify themselves. Like, I said last night on MSG Plus, I'm like, North Turner used to do it with Stephen Davis all the time. 5-6 yards a carry in when he was with the Redskins, head coach, and then he'd be like, let me try something else. By the way, it's Gil Alexander. It's Jonathan Von Tobel. It is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Jason, Darren Waller's great-grandfather? Quick, who?
No idea, sorry.
Jazz musician Fats Waller. This is trivia we need to know. Sorry about that, JBT. I had to do a
sign. I actually didn't know that. That's good. That's a good nugget.
A little nugget there. All right, so the Raiders looking good after yesterday. I have one more thing about them coming up. But the Saints, Drew Brees, on the stat sheet, looks okay. 26 of 38 for 312, a touchdown and a pick. Alvin Kamara certainly didn't do anything wrong. He filled up a stat sheet. But with Brees, and we've been talking about this not just on this show, but throughout the network, and we've done so for a better part of a year now, pretty much consistently. It ain't your mom and dad's Drew Brees, and there's no shame in that. He's 41 years old. It's not. There's no shame whatsoever in it, but it just doesn't seem like. And it was sans Michael Thomas, right? So I do get that. Maybe there just wasn't that availability last night. But the longest pass play was 29 yards. That with a little yak, I think, attached to it. Also, just not throwing it downfield. Like, if you're a Saints backer, either on a season win total over, on a division future, maybe even more than that, conference or Super Bowl, should you be worried, very worried about this?
I would say, yeah, to a certain extent, man. I mean, you looked at some of the numbers too, like you said, even the 8.2 yards per attempt. Like, I think when people go over, like, see, look, 8.2 yards per attempt, you mentioned it. A lot of that's after catch. 33% of his yards came through the air, like only 33% in terms of what he was doing as a passer. You talked about the average depth of target, 5 of 9 on passes, 10 or more yards downfield yesterday, 0 for 1 on 20 or more yards, just one attempt beyond 20 yards for Drew Brees yesterday. And by the way, the inaccuracy is starting to show too. Like, there was a play where he had two options wide open and he just kind of short arms it. You know, like, there were a lot of troublesome plays out there. And I think this is why these next gen stats, these are why, sites like Pro Football Focus, Football Outsiders are so important, because it gives you more of the story instead of looking and saying high completion percentage, 8.2 yards per attempt. What's the problem here? You have to look beyond that. And I would say, yes, like going forward, like even with Michael Thomas out there, he still wasn't pressing the ball downfield in week 1. And so this is, I think you're right. Like, this is not your mom and dad's Drew Brees. This is the guy who we know who he is now, but it is a little troublesome. And Gil, I'll even add on, like, it's even a little more troublesome when you have two guys on the bench behind him, and Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill, in Jameis Winston, who have an arm to stretch the field, who have the ability, I think, to find those deep shots, right? And I think as we get closer along and as the season goes along, if he continues to struggle, because this Drew Brees, by the way, used to pop up at the end of seasons, right? Like, his last three playoff games, we've talked about it, it hit under 6 yards per attempt in his last three postseasons, but now we're starting to see it in week 2, and that's the troubling part about it.
And that pick to Nicholas Morrow, under a minute left in the first half, I mean, that really was the game changer. And it was just, I just guess he didn't see him or something, because that was brutal.
You know, I thought he saw him. I thought he tried to fit it over him, because he did have a wide receiver back there, and I thought he was trying, and he got a little moved off of his spot in the pocket. I thought he was trying to go over him and fit it into that area behind him, and I can't remember who was behind the linebacker, but I thought maybe that he was trying to put it in there, and he was like, I can get it over there, and his arm was just like, nah, man, like, you can't.
Right. Not anymore. You can't do this. All right. Again, we don't want to overreact to anything, but certainly an interesting game last night in which the Saints looked at different times in the first half up 10 points. That it was going to be a run out, quite the opposite. Last thing about this, John, and I may do this multiple times, Jason, on the show today, so I just want to warn people in advance. But, and you're an analytics guy, JBT, so you'll appreciate, I think, and I'm curious if you agree or disagree, and I'm interested in disagreement. I think this is a case, this last sequence, where the Raiders kicked a 54-yarder to, in essence, clinch the game. Right? Daniel Carlson kicks a 54-yard field goal with 1:05 left in the game to give the Raiders the 10-point lead in the eventual final margin of victory, 34-24. And I will phrase this, I will umbrella this as, this is analytics run amok, not in terms of the decision that was made, because I don't know if John Gruden was relying on analytics at all, but the post-mortem on Twitter from analytics folks saying, well, actually, you know, the choice of a field goal versus the choice of a punt, kind of a wash, kind of not really that big of a difference. And in fact, I saw some stat, and I forget who it was, but I believe they said it was like a 2% difference in terms of win probability. Now, here's the thing. I love analytics. I know you do, too. But this bothers me so much. This is stuck in my craw ever since last night. There is nobody who's watched football for their entire lives or were watching football last night. At least I don't think so. Correct me if I'm wrong. Who thinks that 54-yard field goal attempt is a smart play. Now, I know Daniel Carlson made it, and the Raiders did clinch, and it's to end the game. Bravo. By the way, I didn't think the Butker field goal attempt necessarily at the end of overtime, fourth and a foot, was exactly the right thing to do with the Chiefs. Butker proved me wrong on that, too. But as far as the one last night specifically, throwing that one out, you're attempting to punt it, mortar kick it, or down it at the 5-yard line, ideally the 10-yard line. At worst, it's a touchback. It goes to the 20. Here's what a model. First of all, just because someone has a model doesn't mean that it's right. I think that's the first thing I want to get out of the way. Like, we've gotten to the point now where we react. I think the casual fan's reaction to anybody with a model is, oh, it must be smart, must be good. Okay, maybe, maybe not. Let's say it is. Even if it is, a model doesn't incorporate the fact that Daniel Carlson's career high to that point was 54 yards, which he made last week, right? It doesn't factor in the pressure of the situation. Although maybe, by the way, maybe what we've learned in 2 weeks is that having no crowd makes this easier for field goal kickers. Maybe that's a thing. The other thing it doesn't factor in is what we just talked about, that Drew Brees can't throw the ball downfield. And so if he has to go 80 yards minimum in 105 to tie it up versus 56 yards, because they would have gotten the ball at the spot of the kick, so he would have gotten the ball at his own 44, I just think it's a ridiculous choice. Am I off base?
No, and I actually had this conversation last night on Twitter, because, and I wasn't like full-fledged like Gruden's an idiot, but I asked the question. I was like, is that the smartest choice right there? Because you're talking like everything you said, this guy, he made a 54-yarder the first time last week. He didn't hit one last year. That was his career high. So we're talking about that. We're talking about the fact that if you miss, like you said, 44-yard line, I'd rather pin him back 20, and he's got to just dink and dunk the whole way with no timeouts, by the way, with like 60 seconds left. I would agree. And, there was a lot of, well, he gives his kicker confidence.
Oh,
I was like,
God, stop with that. Yeah,
I know. Right. And it's like, cool. Like, if he misses it, at least he walks off the field knowing my coach has confidence in me. Yeah. Drew Brees has it as his own 44-yard line with a minute left. But still, at least I believe in you. And like, I agree with you. Like, I wasn't going to murder him entirely, but I just thought, like, when I watched him walk out there, I was like, is this the smartest choice at this point in this game right now? Like, I feel like you can ice it if you punt it away.
I wasn't on Twitter, but I was incredulous. I was flabbergasted by this. In fact, so much so that I texted my buddy E on this and a bunch of other people, like, how insane this was. And E came back with this, and I think this is beautiful, and I'll wrap it up with this bow, putting it in betting parlance. Because I usually talk about this when it comes to basketball teams that are up 3 points at the ends of games. And I have often said on this show, if I know the coach that's up 3 points is going to foul, I'll lay minus 2,500 on a win. But if I don't know he's going to foul, I wouldn't lay minus 250. So I'll say the same thing last night. E came back with this last night on this field goal. He actually laid, I didn't even know this when I formed my opinion, on third and long, the play before, he actually laid some ridiculous price. I want to say it was like minus 2,500. Now you can debate, if you have that kind of risk tolerance that he has. But he laid that assuming that the punt would happen or that they'd get a first down, right? No chance did he think that they would kick a field goal. When he found out they were kicking a field goal, like, not only did his heart sink, but if you put it in betting terms, like, he would never have laid even a tenth of that, right, what you would lay juice wise. So I just think, I don't know, just sometimes maybe that's too much on that, but analytics run amok to me. Someone can tell me where I'm wrong. And I know that some people come back with numbers. Actually, Gil, it's the same thing. Yeah, I don't think so. Common sense has to be applied sometimes. NBA, I'm sorry, John.
It's an interesting conversation. Yeah. I agree with it. I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love that stuff. It's mind-boggling to me that they attempted that, but it worked out good for the Raiders. And now because it worked out, it's going to be like,
it was right.
We'll do it again. Right. Gave him confidence, just like you said. Daniel Carlson, by the way, was great at Auburn, not so good in Minnesota, now doing big things, obviously, with the Raiders. Okay, tonight, game three. We're not doing the back and forth thing with the conference series. We're catching up the Nuggets and the Lakers to the amount of games that the Heat and the Celtics have played in the East. So it's game three of the Lakers and the Nuggets. Lakers famously winning game two on Anthony Davis's three-point shot at the buzzer, which I don't know about you, but as someone who didn't have any skin in that game, my reaction wasn't wow. My reaction was just like, oh, of course he did. Right? I was just like, okay, right. There's no defense for that. What kind of chance you give the Nuggets here as 6.5-point dogs, and how are you betting this?
I mean, so in terms of like covering, I give them a great chance here. And I'm not sure if I got to talk to you before this series started or not, but my whole thing going into this, Gil, was when I saw Lakers 7.5 for game one, I was in on Denver. And my whole thing was, if you look back at the regular season and the way these teams played, the 1-3 record for the Nuggets, but a plus 3.2 net rating against Los Angeles, they played them extremely well. All of the games, except for two of them, right? Two of the games were double digit victories for both teams, right? That was the one win for the Nuggets. The Lakers got one. The other two were single digit wins. By the way, the other coming in the bubble on another buzzer beater, this one from Kuzma, and guess who was also in the center of that defensive play? Mason Plumlee. So I think Mike Malone's learned a lesson. Stop putting Plumlee out there on buzzer beating situations. But regardless, if I look at this from the perspective, I think this number should still be in the range of, like, this should be much closer to 5 or 5.5. And I think 5 is a proper number between these two teams. You look at, again, the regular season and what we have seen, where it was 2.5, 2.5, 3, 3, and then 5.5. And the Nuggets coming out here too in the market, Gil, they're 11-5 against the spread in the postseason. Like, the market's been really down on this Nuggets team, but they continue to cover numbers. And I think this is another example. This is a team that plays the Los Angeles Lakers relatively well. They can get buckets when they need to because they have two superstars, just like Los Angeles does. And I think we have seen, even in game one, they were up 38-36 in the first quarter, and then they just lost some steam because I think of the turnaround after coming back again from down 3-1. So if I look at it from this perspective, I do think the Nuggets are live to cover the number and get within that 6.5. And I'm going to be stubbornly playing it until it gets to where I think it is, or until I get my teeth kicked in, regardless, you know?
Yeah, you're a braver man than I. I will wait for a big lead one way or the other, and then I'll probably play it in game. By the way, LeBron, postseason this year, 34.1 minutes per game. Previous postseasons combined, 41.7. Yep. So that's a good thing for the Lakers in terms of a tread on the tire.
Oh, yeah. Like, Rajon Rondo coming back was massive for him because now you actually have somebody to facilitate the offense, right? Like, they still kind of struggle and those bench lineups don't really have a lot of shooting. But at the same time, you at least have somebody to execute the offense and to make some extra passes and to make the offense flow a little bit, right? That's why their assists have been up in this postseason since Rondo's come back as well. And I think there's a mark, I believe it's like 26 assists, and they're undefeated when they have at least 26 assists in the game. The Los Angeles Lakers, Rondo coming back is massive for him. And to your point, it just takes the tread off of LeBron because now he doesn't have to play those 40 minutes and run an offense that's kind of like a rudder of the ship without him, because Rondo's been so huge for him in those bench minutes.
All right, tomorrow, talking to Jonathan Von Tobel, host of The Edge here on VSiN. It's Boston-Miami. It's game four. Celtics with the bounce back in game three. 2-1 in the series now in favor of the Heat. Same exact line we've been getting, John. Boston minus three. How have you been playing this? I assume whatever the answer is to that, it's the same moving forward. What do you got here?
So when I was looking at this overall, I didn't get involved first off, right? Because, you know, I had played the series pre-flop to get a little off of that future ticket I have in Miami, and I did want to watch. And I thought it was interesting, Gil, that game one opened 1.5 and it closed 2.5, right? Game two opens 2.5, closes about 2.5. And then we get to game three and it opens 3. And I was like, well, why? Like, after two games, right, we saw the results and that Miami was winning and that they were just a lot closer with Boston. I thought Boston should have been favored, but I felt like 1.5 was the number. And yet we saw the market keep moving up in Boston's, you know, in Boston's favor. But then we got the change, right? I'm always looking for change and why it happens. And Gordon Hayward's presence is that change. And while from a scoring perspective, he wasn't that good, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Celtics posted their highest assists in this series with Hayward on the floor. They tend to get a little isolation heavy, especially without Hayward, because you have guys like Kemba Walker, you have guys like Jason Tatum, you have Jaylen Brown, and they tend to run their offense, okay, it's your turn, it's your turn, it's your turn, as opposed to really moving the ball around. And that's the difference between these two teams, right? Boston has guys who can create their shots. Miami is the better ball movement team, but with Hayward back in the mix, they started moving it more. But here's the thing that, to use your phrase from earlier, that sticks in my craw, is the fact that for some reason Eric Spoelstra decided to go away from that zone in game three, and I just didn't really understand why. Yeah. You know, they led the league in the regular season in running zone, and they did it in the first two games, and they didn't in game three, and I would expect expect to have them bring that back here and see how that affects them even with Gordon Hayward. So my initial thought is to take Miami with three, but I'm just going to sit back and I'll probably attack this in game because I want to see from a defensive perspective if Miami's going to start to play that zone a little bit more again, because it really bothered Boston through the first two games.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's very, very odd. They went away from that. By the way, I Googled just now exacta matchups before the playoffs, and I don't see a source, so I don't know the book that this came from, but Lakers Celtics was 19-1 as the finals matchup. Lakers Heat 25-1 as the finals.
What about Nuggets
matchup.
Heat?
It's an excellent question. Let me see what that is. Hold on. Let me see. Let's do this live on air, shall we? Because that'll be interesting.
I think a lot of people were expecting that finals matchup, you know?
Yeah, Lakers Celtics. Yeah, exactly. Lakers Celtics 19-1. Lakers Heat 25-1. Nuggets Celtics. Let me find this. Nuggets Celtics would be 80-1 and Nuggets nice. Heat 100-1. And you have futures on the Heat and on the Nuggets, but not on the Lakers and the Celtics.
Right. Yeah. The Nuggets to win the Western Conference at 12-1. And then I have the Heat at 80-1 to win the finals.
Very nice. All right. Well, good luck to you, man. I appreciate the time as always.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me on.
JVT working overtime, doing lots of big things. Pleasure listening to him on the way into work last night to the MSG Plus show. By the way, A Numbers Game is always brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. If the basketball, baseball, and hockey action at BetMGM Sports isn't enough for you, football is back, of course, at BetMGM Sports Nevada, the premier sports betting app from the same folks who bring you the best sportsbook and casino action in Las Vegas. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much, much more. Just download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. And if you're excited about the return of basketball, baseball, and hockey, then it's time to believe in your game at BetMGM. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander, Josh Towers coming up, Jason Weingarten, and a whole bunch of baseball. Dan Bespris with basketball. Drew Dinsick as well across the sports. Maybe even ask him a tennis question. We're coming back. A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Jason, tell me what you just told me off air. What'd you say?
The name Fats really went out of style.
It really did. I was going to name my kid Fats Alexander. You should name yours Fats Khan if you
ever have one. Fats Khan's a good one, yeah.
Fats really did go out of style. By the way, Numbers Game brought to you by, of course, all that we do here at VSiN. And it is football betting gone crazy. As you know, there's always room to improve your sports betting IQ, and VSiN is here to help you bet smarter this season. Just start your 7-day risk-free trial and place your next bet with confidence. Sign up today and you'll get Point Spread Weekly, our digital betting guide with NFL power ratings and consensus picks from our experts, 24/7 live video streaming with full replays of all VSiN shows, the college football betting guide with previews, predictions, and betting strategies, daily emails with best bets from all our shows, hosts, and guests. Plus, you can always access our parlay calculator, prop bet search engine, and pick tracker on VSiN.com. Just visit VSiN.com/subscribe to start your risk-free trial today. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. I always thought like naming girls was easier, but I think that's a good rule. If you're going to have a boy, go to like old jazz names and see if you can come up with one. Fats. By the way, for those who missed it, Darren Waller's great-grandfather, the great jazz pianist, Fats Waller. That's why we're talking about that. All right, last night, I don't know if you know this, Jason. I don't know if you know this. I do along with Matt Brown, Danielle Alvari, and Kelly Bidlin, 7 to 10 Eastern on MSG+. We do primetime action, VSiN's primetime action, powered by DraftKings. It's live in-game betting, and we have an absolute blast with it. And we're winning, so that makes it all the funner. Funner? More fun? I think more fun is probably the word there. Our records have been great. They're probably unsustainable, by the way. I think I'm 24-11 in 35 bets I've made on that show now in 2+ weeks. Unsustainable, for sure, and I try to warn the audience about that. But we just have a blast. Sometimes it's pre-flop, sometimes it's in-game, sometimes we're trying to set up for in-game, it doesn't happen. Anyway, yesterday I had two pre-flop baseball bets. Both were totals. I had the over in the Yankees-Blue Jays game. That cashed very early. By the way, the Blue Jays cashed it themselves in the Blue Jays win over the Yankees. I think it was an 11-5 final last night, if I'm not mistaken. But the Blue Jays won it in a run out, and the over hit very easily. But the under, I had the under in the Reds Milwaukee game, which is a big game in terms of trying to jockey for position for the National League's eighth and final playoff position. And we'll talk with Josh Towers and Jason Weingarten more about all that coming up. Score was 3-1 in the bottom of the eighth. 3-1 in the bottom of the eighth. And I actually said on air, I was like, all right, Reds, calm down. Let's get out of this inning. Let's not score any more runs. And of course, two outs in the bottom of the eighth, two men on. Mike Moustakas goes yard. Three-run ding-dong. So the best I can do at that point is a push because it goes to 6-1. And so they get out of that inning. And sure enough, two outs. Then in the top of the ninth, I just have to get out of that. Runner on. And Jace Peterson, of all home run hitters, on the Mount Rushmore of home run hitters. You know, there's Aaron, there's Ruth, there's Bonds, and there's Jace Peterson. Jace Peterson, two-run shot with two out in the bottom of the, excuse me, top of the ninth. And that crushes me. By the way, it all happened right as I questioned our stenographer of the show, our bookkeeper, Ben, who does such a great job taking out records. As soon as I questioned him on air, the karma came against me and the home runs and the two-run shot happened. So I say all this to say that's gambling and that sucked. But my baseball pick of the day is again the under in the Milwaukee-Cincinnati game. By the way, the Reds end up winning that game by that score 6-3 last night. And so the Reds right now, actually the Reds, I think, leapfrog the Phillies, if you want to really know the truth, right at this moment if the playoffs were to start. The Reds are actually in the seventh position. The Phillies would be in the eighth. But I like the under 8.5 here, Brewers and Reds. This one, not quite as good as the pitching matchup of yesterday. Yesterday was Castillo against Woodruff. This is Sonny Gray, who certainly fills the bill when he's at his best, against Brett Anderson. And this is a game between two right-handed pitchers, obviously. And this is the kind of game where the under 8.5 looks very good to me. By the way, the Reds and the Brewers, from a weighted on base perspective, against righties. Brewers, 303 this year, weighted on base against righties. Reds a little better, 319. But Sonny Gray, 2.92 fielding independent, 3.16 xFIP. That looks good. The walks have been not good this year, 4.14 per nine. Walk rate of 10.7%. So that's definitely the issue. 30.6% K rate is very good for Sonny Gray. And then there's Brett Anderson, who we're going to have to overcome for sure. 4.54 fielding independent on Brett Anderson. But 8.5 to me is still on the high end. So I'm going to take the under in this game, Brewers and Reds. I think the Brewers will have a quick hook with Anderson in this one, trying to keep up with Sonny Gray and the Reds. The proverbial must-win situation. Not technically must-win, because they could lose and still make the postseason. But the Brewers have very little margin of error here. They've got to manage this game as if they have very little margin of error, because that's, in fact, what the case is. We'll get Jason Weingarten's baseball picks coming up. Josh Towers next. We'll give him some first five stats and some season total stats and get his reaction. Coming up on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
A Numbers Game brought to you by Indeed. Indeed helps you find the high impact hire your business needs, and fast. You'll find lots of great candidates and no long-term contracts at Indeed.com/high impact. It's Gil Alexander. By the way, correction of what I was saying quickly before the break, and I promise you the handicap was the one that was well thought out, but me saying it before the break was not. Righty versus lefty, by the way, in the Reds Brewers game tonight. It is the Brewers who have the 303 weighted on base against righties like Sonny Gray, and Anderson is a lefty for the Brewers. The Reds against lefties, this was the handicap, sorry, also very bottom of the league, 303 against lefties weighted on base. So that's the primary handicap of why the under is 8.5. By the way, we get tweets at Beating the Book. Here's one from Peter Watchery. Love the analytic conversation about the Raiders field goal, and I have no opinion. But might it be the DNA of the Raiders to go for it, swashbuckling to victory? What would Al Davis have done? Boy, Peter, I hope they're not making decisions based on that stuff. But it's an interesting. I love this kind of conversation. Could do it for 2 hours on that field goal alone. Let us bring him in. He used to work here at VSiN. We love him so. Ladies and gentlemen, former professional baseball pitcher, it's Josh Towers. How you doing, Josh?
I'm good, Gilly. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Josh, should I tell people how I how we connected last night? Should I tell them that? You want to know about it? Should I say that out loud?
You might want to leave that one out.
You might want to leave that out? No, okay. All right.
Yeah, leave that out.
Okay. I'll leave it out. Okay. We won't talk about it. All right. Let me ask you this, and I'll get your reactions on stuff like this. The good folks over at Oddshark. So I put together first five stats day by day, but over at Oddsharks, they went one step further and, quite frankly, better than me by putting together units won and units lost. So these are, if people are betting first fives this year, not full games, but first fives, the most profitable teams in baseball are the Twins, who are 32-16-7. Remember, you can push after five. 32-16-7 first fives. 11.25 units to the positive for bettors. The Marlins right behind them at 25-19-9, but they're a dog lots of the time, so they made money because they were dogs and more bang for your buck. And the Mariners and the Giants, 1-2-3-4. Twins, Marlins, Mariners, Giants. Best first five. Any of those teams surprise you? Dodgers, Cubs, by the way, would be fifth and sixth.
Yeah, three of the four.
Yeah, I mean, me too.
I guess Minnesota, obviously, we expect them to be a little bit better. That offense is still really good. And, you know, you got Cano. Sorry, not Cano. The pitching always makes me nervous with Minnesota. With the offense, you know what you're getting. So I think they stay in it so long offensively, and then the pitching comes around enough to give them an opportunity. I wish the pitching was better. That team would be a more dominant, trustworthy team. But you understand where they're coming from. The other three, in my opinion, Gil, I expected them all to be at the – I thought the Giants were going to be one of the worst teams. You knew Seattle was going to be awful as well. So, like, the Marlins expected, but maybe we just don't pay attention. Like, it just looked like the Giants said, we just washed our hands with everything. And then Seattle traded everybody. And the Marlins kept getting pieces from trades and stuff, but you never saw those pieces do anything. So, once again, let's put them at the bottom of the division as well. All three of those teams are, what are they at? They're either in the playoffs or they're knocking on the door of the playoffs.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Who like never would have thought that. So like you said, we're getting plus money almost every game on three of those four teams. Shocking.
Yeah, Marlins first five, 11.15 units to the positive, so really just a tick below the Twins for first place. Mariners plus 9.25 units roughly for first five bettors. Again, bizarro exercise if you bet them first five, either as a favorite or a dog where they were primarily each and every game. And the Giants plus 6.7 units to the positive for first fivers. And yes, you are right. The Marlins currently would be in the playoffs. The Mariners jostling for a position. They're looking up at the Astros in the AL West. And the Giants literally a half game out of a playoff position in the National League right now, 6 days left in the season. By the way, bottom, let's do the same exercise. So the Royals are the biggest hemorrhager of money for first five bettors, 17.45 units in the red. If you made the terrible error of betting the Royals every single game in the first five. But here's number two. The Atlanta Braves, obviously they were favorites and probably sizable favorites in much of these, and that has a lot to do with this. But the Braves are 20-27-6 in first fives, costing bettors 11.35 units. That's got to be surprising.
It just goes to what I tell my son and the kids every day when we're coaching and teaching baseball. Anybody can start a game, not anybody can finish. And that just shows you that teams check out at some point and not everybody's built for nine innings. I mean, if that's the reality, and I know they had some starters not really do their job, but if they're 32-22-10 games above 500, that means that they're staying in games and beating teams late, which is impressive. And that means the bullpen's keeping them right where they need to be. That's a great stat to know too, especially going into the postseason.
Talking to Josh Towers at No Don't Josh on Twitter. All right, real quick reactions to these because we got, let's say, 30 seconds for each of these. These are the overs on season win totals that have already clinched now. 6 days left. A lot of teams haven't yet. But these are the overs that have already clinched. Tampa Bay, Baltimore, the White Sox, the Tigers, the Miami Marlins, the San Diego Padres, and the San Francisco Giants. I guess we already answered who was the most surprising there, didn't we?
Baltimore, maybe, to be honest with you.
Well, 23
wins. And they are over.
Yeah, well, they were 20.5. But remember, they had that quick start. So they
had a great start. The lead the least surprising is the White Sox. Like we talked about in the past, I thought the White Sox were going to be really, really good this year, and they've showed off. I mean, they've been slowly building this team for a couple of years, and I think it's gone under the radar. So it's good to see a team like that be that successful. But Baltimore, I mean, they were in it up to like 2 weeks ago. They were in the postseason.
Toronto, by the way, has clinched an over for most bettors, but those who got it at a bad number need one more win. All right, unders that have clinched. Yankees finally clinch in quotes, the under, with 31 wins, but they had to get to 37.5. Season win total numbers will vary, but the Yankees under, Red Sox under, Houston under, and badly, they're 8 games still below their season win total. Texas under, the LA Angels under. They were the first team, I believe, along with the Red Sox to go under. The Mets under, the Nationals under, the Pirates under, and the Diamondbacks under, which is the most surprising of that group.
The most surprising is Texas and the Yankees. And the Yankees were off to that start, too, and then they just started to lose. So, like, if you had them, you figured you were going to get that. Texas is the most surprising. I mean, when they came into the season with that starting rotation, I thought that this team had a chance to do some special things. After watching them play baseball the last few days, now I understand why they're at the bottom of the league. Absolutely shocking, the stuff that they do. But that surprises me the most. Texas
and the Yankees. Josh, instant offense. I'm sorry it was so short. We'll do it again soon. My man.
Yes, thank you, buddy.
Josh Towers at No Don't Josh. Why at No Don't Josh? Because he realizes when he's about to tweet something, he needs that mechanism in his head that goes, No Don't Josh, because it's something controversial. He goes ahead and tweets it anyway. It's our buddy Josh Towers. Coming back, Jason Weingarten from Southern Cali with his baseball picks of the day. Coming back, a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game with Gil Alexander.
September is showtime at BetMGM Sports, and they're offering new customers a chance to win $100 in free bets when you place a $1 wager on the Lakers-Nuggets game tonight. And if either team hits a three, you win. It's that simple. Just sign up and make your first bet with bonus code VSiN100. To take advantage of this special offer, there's never been a better time to sign up at BetMGM Sports, the king of sportsbooks. Download the BetMGM app today and use promo code VSiN100 to win $100 when you bet $1 on the Lakers versus Nuggets game. And if either team hits a three, you win. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager, please. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, or West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. And again, if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. And if you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in the state of Nevada. I like that BetMGM went with the king of sports books. I wonder if they're gonna put that one. The king of all sports books. This from Marcus Phillips, who listens to us in España. We love Marcus. He has given us what Adam Schefter tweeted out right at the outset of this show, or at least 10 minutes into the show. Update: the Denver Broncos are signing former Jags and Rams quarterback Blake Bortles to a 1-year deal once he passes his COVID protocols, per source. With Drew Lock out 3 to 5 weeks, the Broncos almost signed Bortles last year, and now we'll take the next step this year. So Denver, welcome Blake Bortles, backing up Jeff Driscoll.
Good luck with that.
What's the opposite of moving a line? I'm just going to point that out. All right. I said Jason Weingarten was next, but I'm all discombobulated. I don't know what's happening. Let's talk hockey first, shall we? I always have trouble with the two consecutive words, talk and hockey. That's just me. Ladies and gentlemen, from Edmonton, Alberta, he's our hockey expert. He's Andy McNeil. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing pretty good, Gil. How about you?
I'm doing well. We have the adjusted series price, Jason, on this, on the Lightning and the Stars. So the Lightning go out to a 3-0 lead game 2. They're down 1-0 to the Stars. 3 goals in the first period last night, and you're like, all right, well, this game's over. This is going to be a runout. But then again, there are the Stars. It's never over with the Dallas Stars. Lightning do hold on and win it 3-2. Adjusted series price, right back kind of to where it was before the series started. I guess that makes sense in a de facto best of 5. Lightning about -200, Stars +170. Anything from what you saw last night change your overall thinking about this series?
No, I guess last night, you know, anybody that's watched the NHL playoffs specifically should know that a 3-0 lead isn't the end of things by any means, especially if it's in the first period. Teams have incentive to keep playing right till the final buzzer. We saw the Lightning do that in game number one when they were down 2 goals in the third period. So, I mean, it's no surprise that the Stars really pushed back after falling down 3-0. I thought that the Lightning were kind of fortunate to jump out to a 3-0 lead early like that. I mean, they were the better team in the first period for sure, but 3 goals better? I don't know about that. So, you know, a fortunate way to start the game for the Lightning, and then score effects kind of took over. The Lightning really started to sit on their lead, and especially in the second period. But overall, they closed out the game pretty well, I thought. And going forward, I mean, really, it's the same thing. It's the same story. I think it's this Lightning team just has too much skill. And then hopefully, you know, as someone who has some stock in the Lightning here, some skin in the game, they get one of their best players back, Steven Stamkos, and they'll have even more high end skill to work with.
So let's talk about that. Steven Stamkos, who is by, you know, conventional wisdom, the Lightning's best overall player. Hopefully they get him back here. He was practicing, I believe, yesterday. He was skating yesterday, so it looked like he might have gotten in game two. But it looks like he could come back here. From a modeling standpoint, or just how you do your numbers, how does that work back in for you? So what's the process of the Lightning with Stamkos, without Stamkos? And then just when you step back from your model, second part of the question, and let's just say put your coach's hat, and I know this is putting you on the spot, but how do you feel about incorporating Stamkos this late into the game, if you will, so to speak?
Yeah, intuitively, I think it would be pretty tough to step back into this kind of hockey environment after being out for so long. But, you know, I really think Stamkos, if he's coming back, it's to help the Lightning power play. It's the, you know, play those easier minutes, those 5-on-4 minutes whenever he can. I would expect that they would use him sparingly at even strength, but who knows? It's obviously there's been a lot of secrecy surrounding the injury this entire playoff. But, you know, as from a modeling standpoint, you know, if without taking any of that into account, Stamkos would really boost the Lightning's chances. You know, with taking some of that into account, I do scale it back some because I do find it hard to believe how much he can actually impact a single game over the course of a series and those power play opportunities. Sure, I think Stamkos is really going to help the team. But, you know, right now I think the Lightning should be priced around maybe a little bit north of minus 140, you know, and they're higher than that right now, so no value there. And if Stamkos was to come back, I would make that closer to minus 150-ish. And, you know, looking at the market right now, I think, you know, if you are looking to play that move, if Stamkos takes the ice for warm-ups in game three, you better be looking to get the best of it. You know, if you're looking to get on the Lightning there and you see Stamkos take the ice and you can still get the Lightning at minus 150, maybe that's an okay bet. But if you're going to, you know, jump in at when it hits minus 170 or minus 180 or something like that, you're not getting the best of it. That's a bad way to play a move like that. I'd definitely recommend sitting the game out or, you know, looking at betting the other side at Dallas at plus 150 or better than that at that point.
Yeah, if you're betting the Lightning at minus 170, if it gets there, as I like to say, you're probably doing this wrong. Probably doing this wrong. We're talking to Andy McNeil from Edmonton, Alberta, who was responsible for our pre-postseason guide here at VSiN and has been with us throughout the postseason. And I know is looking forward to the offseason. Can I say that out loud, Andy? I know you are. I know you're looking forward to an offseason after this. Nonstop hockey. Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know what the regular season is going to look at. I know we're not done talking about the Stanley Cup Finals here, but I mean, I'm looking forward to things getting back to some sense, some form of normalcy, because it's just been it's been challenging at the whole bubble environment, and I like the way things are, in normal circumstances, and I'm sure everybody else does too.
Where you can operate quietly in your corner of the world. Gary Bettman saying he hopes to do it in front of fans next year, and maybe late December, early January. He threw that out there, so we'll see. But that's what it looks like right now. Let me ask you one last thing, and this is from Todd Wright. Todd Wright, who's a guest on this show frequently and who lives in the Tampa area and has followed this team closely for many years, and he emailed this, and I'm curious your reaction. I think I probably know your reaction, but I'm curious what it would be to this. He said, as I've made a point on multiple podcasts, Andre Vasilevsky's big goose egg when it comes to never posting a postseason shutout is glaring. He's now started 48 NHL playoff games and never shut the opponent out. I think it's 49 now after last night. He plays the one position in the four major North American professional sports that can win a game on his own, even more than a quarterback, even more than a guy in the NBA. Not only do they need him to do that tonight, he was talking about last night, to get him back in the series, but here's another reason the shutout seems essential. Obviously they won without the shutout, but the last 10 Stanley Cup champions, he says, all had at least one shutout in the playoffs from their goaltender. Many had more than that. None here with Vasilevsky. And also back in 2004, when the Lightning won their only championship, Hobby Bullen had 5 shutouts. If Vasilevsky is truly the best in the game right now, he needs to close this hole in his resume before it's too late. Now, I'm not going to ask you if you think they need to have a shutout to win the Stanley Cup, because obviously they don't need to. But it is an interesting stat, I guess, that he hasn't authored one, isn't it? That is a little peculiar.
Yeah, that's a little strange, I guess. But just based on the eye test, I think Vasilevsky has been great, specifically in these last two games. I thought he was excellent in both games. I think it's a very tough position to play. The goals that are scored, it feels silly to like break these down frame by frame and say like, oh, look how this could have went. But a lot of goals scored in this series have been off second opportunities where the first shot gets blocked. It comes right back to the shooter. That's a hard stop, a hard shot to stop. I thought he's been really good in these playoffs. Overall, is he the best goaltender in the league? I'm not sure. It's tough to play with a team it might sound a little bit weird to say this, but I think as a goaltender, it would be tough to play with a team that has as much offensive firepower as the Lightning had, because, they're scoring 3 to 4 goals a game and maybe playing a little bit, loosey-goosey in their own ends at times and not playing as sharp defensively as a team that is, not winning by those wide margins. So, it's a little tough to judge a goaltender in that context, but I thought he's been great, and I think he's more of a general out on the ice than people give him credit for. I see him directing traffic out there a lot. He's very engaged, and I think he's not going to be your MVP of the playoffs, but he's a big reason why the Lightning are where they're at.
All right, so for Game 3 tomorrow, what's the strike price again for the Stars, for those who are looking to get in on the Stars?
Assuming Stamkos isn't going to play, and I guess it depends on what you think about, the news that we've been seeing lately, I'd like the Stars at +150 or better. Personally, I'm not looking to bet against myself here. Right. I'm riding the Lightning series price. But, yeah, I'd bet the Stars at +150 or better. If Stamkos is playing, well, I'm probably looking for a better price than that, obviously.
Now, here's the follow-up, and the final thing to that would be, now, how many people listening to that are going to adhere to that by the book? And, like, if it's +145, they're going to be like, whatever, I'm still betting it. I'm going to say 80% of the people listening. But +150 is the number.
The one thing I try to stress to people is to be conscious of the price that you're betting, and it's going to go a long way in the run of a season. It might not seem super important when maybe you're just looking for some action in the middle of the Stanley Cup final, but over the course of a betting career, you want to get the best of it.
100%. Andy McNeil. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it as always. Drew Dinsick next. Tennis, basketball, and the NFL coming back on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.